Chapter 8. Countryman who had been taken prisoner, and hailed me with a cheer, as Captain Carton's boat ran in, and took me on board. I reported, "All escaped, sir. All well, all safe, all here. God bless me, and God bless them, what a cheer." It turned me weak, as I was passed on from hand to hand to the stern of the boat. Every hand patting me, or grasping me in some way or other, in the moment of my going by. "Hold up, my brave fellow," says Captain Carton, clapping me on the shoulder like a friend, and giving me a flask. "Put your lips to that, and they'll be red again. Now, boys, give way." The banks flew by us, as if the mightiest stream that ever ran was with us. And so it was, I am sure, meaning the stream to those men's ardor and spirit. The banks flew by us, and we came in sight of the rafts. The banks flew by us, and we came alongside of the rafts. The banks stopped, and there was a tumult of laughing and crying, and kissing and shaking of hands, and catching up of children and setting of them down again, and a wild hurry of thankfulness and joy that melted everyone and softened all hearts. I had taken notice, in Captain Carton's boat, that there was a curious and quite new sort of fitting on board. It was a kind of a little bower made of flowers, and it was set up behind the captain, and betwixt him and the rudder. Not only was this arbor, so to call it, neatly made of flowers, but it was ornamented in a singular way. Some of the men had taken the ribbons and buckles off their hats, and hung them among the flowers. Others had made festoons and streamers of their handkerchiefs, and hung them there. Others had intermixed such trifles as bits of glass and shining fragments of lockets and tobacco boxes with the flowers, so that altogether it was a very bright and lively object in the sunshine. But why there, or what for, I did not understand. Now, as soon as the first bewilderment was over, Captain Carton gave the order to land for the present. But this boat of his, with two hands left in her, immediately put off again, when the men were out of her, and kept off, some yards from the shore. As she floated there, with the two hands gently backing water to keep her from going down the stream, this pretty little arbor attracted many eyes. None of the boat's crew, however, had anything to say about it, except that it was the captain's fancy. The captain with the women and children clustering round him, and the men of all ranks grouped outside them, and all listening stood telling how the expedition, deceived by its bad intelligence, had chased the light pirate boats all that fatal night, and had still followed in their wake next day, and had never suspected until many hours too late, that the great pirate body had drawn off in the darkness when the chase began, and shot over to the island. He stood telling how the expedition, supposing the whole array of armed boats to be ahead of it, got tempted into shallows and went aground, but not without having its revenge upon the two decoy boats, both of which it had come up with, overhand, and sent to the bottom with all on board. He stood telling how the expedition, fearing then that the case stood as it did, got afloat again, by great exertion, after the loss of four more tides, and returned to the island, where they found the sloop scuttled and the treasure gone. He stood telling how my officer, Lieutenant Linderwood, was left upon the island, with as strong a force as could be got together hurriedly from the mainland, and how the three boats we saw before us were manned and armed, and had come away, exploring the coast and inlets, in search of any tidings of us. He stood telling all this, with his face to the river, and, as he stood telling it, the little arbor of flowers floated in the sunshine before all the faces there. Leaning on Captain Carton's shoulder, between him and Miss Marion, was Mrs. Fisher, her head drooping on her arm. She asked him, without raising it, when he had told so much, whether he had found her mother? "Be comforted. She lies," said the captain gently, "under the cocoa nut trees on the beach." "And my child, Captain Carton, did you find my child too? Does my darling rest with my mother?" "No. Your pretty child sleeps," said the captain, "under a shade of flowers." His voice shook, but there was something in it that struck all the hearers. At that moment there sprung from the arbor in his boat a little creature, clapping her hands and stretching out her arms, and crying, "Dear Papa! Dear Mama! I am not killed! I am saved! I am coming to kiss you! Take me to them! Take me to them, good, kind sailors!" Nobody who saw that scene has ever forgotten it, I am sure, or ever will forget it. The child had kept quite still, where her brave grandmama had put her, first whispering in her ear, "Whatever happens to me, do not stir, my dear." Comma and had remained quiet until the fort was deserted. She had then crept out of the trench, and gone into her mother's house. And there, alone on the solitary island, in her mother's room, and asleep on her mother's bed, the captain had found her. Nothing could induce her to be parted from him, after he took her up in his arms, and he had brought her away with him, and the men had made the bower for her. To see those men now, was a sight. The joy of the women was beautiful. The joy of those women who had lost their own children, was quite sacred and divine. But, the ecstasies of Captain Carton's boat's crew, when their pet was restored to her parents, were wonderful for the tenderness they showed in the midst of roughness. As the captain stood with the child in his arms, and the child's own little arms now clinging round his neck, now round her father's, now round her mother's, now round someone who pressed up to kiss her, the boat's crew shook hands with one another, waved their hats over their heads, laughed, sang, cried, danced and all among themselves, without wanting to interfere with anybody in a manner never to be represented. At last, I saw the coxswain and another, two very hard-faced men, with grizzled heads, who had been the hardiest of the hardy all along, close with one another, get each of them the other's head under his arm, and pommel away at it with his fist as hard as he could, in his excess of joy. When we had well rested, and refreshed ourselves and very glad we were to have some of the heartening things to eat, and drink that had come up in the boats, we recommenced our voyage down the river. Rafts, and boats, and all. I said to myself, it was a very different kind of voyage now, from what it had been, and I fell into my proper place and station among my fellow soldiers. But, when we halted for the night, I found that Miss Marion had spoken to Captain Carton concerning me. For, the captain came straight up to me, and says he, "My brave fellow, you have been Miss Marion's bodyguard all along, and you shall remain so. Nobody shall supersede you in the distinction and pleasure of protecting that young lady." I thanked his honor in the fittest words I could find, and that night I was placed on my old post of watching the place where she slept. More than once in the night, I saw Captain Carton come out into the air, and stroll about there, to see that all was well. I have now this other singular confession to make, that I saw him with a heavy heart. Yes, I saw him with a heavy, heavy heart. In the daytime, I had the like post in Captain Carton's boat. I had a special station of my own, behind Miss Marion, and no hands, but hers ever touched my wound. It has been healed these many long years, but no other hands have ever touched it. Mr. Portage was kept tolerably quiet now, with pen and ink, and began to pick up his senses a little. Seated in the second boat, he made documents with Mr. Kitten, pretty well all day, and he generally handed in a protest about something whenever we stopped. The captain, however, made so very light of these papers, that it grew into a saying among the men, when one of them wanted a match for his pipe, "Hand us over a protest, Jack." As to Mrs. Portage, she still wore the nightcap, and she now had cut all the ladies on account of her not having been formally and separately rescued by Captain Carton before anybody else. The end of Mr. Portage, to bring to an end all I know about him, was, that he got great compliments at home for his conduct on these trying occasions, and that he died of yellow jaundice, a governor and a K.C. B. Sergeant Bruce had fallen from a high fever into a low one. Tom Packer, the only man who could have pulled the sergeant through it, kept hospital aboard the old raft, and Mrs. Biltet, as brisk as ever again. But the spirit of that little woman, when things tried it, was not equal to appearances, was head nurse under his directions. Before we got down to the Mosquito Coast, the joke had been made by one of our men, that we should see her gazetted Mrs. Tom Packer, Vice Biltet exchanged. When we reached the coast, we got native boats as substitutes for the rafts, and we rowed along under the land, and in that beautiful climate, and upon that beautiful water, the blooming days were like enchantment. Ah! They were running away, faster than any sea or river, and there was no tide to bring them back. We were coming very near the settlement, where the people of Silver Store were to be left, and from which we Marines were under orders to return to Belize. Captain Carton had, in the boat by him, a curious long-barreled Spanish gun, and he had said to Miss Marion one day that it was the best of guns, and had turned his head to me, and said, "Gil Davis, load her fresh with a couple of slugs, against a chance of showing how good she is." So, I had discharged the gun over the sea, and had loaded her, according to orders, and there it had lain at the captain's feet, convenient to the captain's hand. The last day, but one of our journey, was an uncommonly hot day. We started very early, but there was no cool air on the sea as the day got on, and by noon the heat was really hard to bear, considering that there were women and children to bear it. Now, we happened to open, just at that time, a very pleasant little cove or bay, where there was a deep shade from a great growth of trees. Now, the captain, therefore, made the signal to the other boats, to follow him in and lie by a while. The men who were off duty went ashore, and lay down, but were ordered for caution's sake, not to stray, and to keep within view. The others rested on their oars, and dozed. Awnings had been made of one thing and another, in all the boats, and the passengers found it cooler, to be under them in the shade, when there was room enough, than to be in the thick woods. So, the passengers were all afloat, and mostly sleeping. I kept my post behind Miss Marion, and she was on Captain Carton's right in the boat, and Mrs. Fisher sat on her right again. The captain had Mrs. Fisher's daughter on his knee. He and the two ladies were talking about the pirates, and were talking softly, partly because people do talk softly under such indolent circumstances, and partly because the little girl had gone off asleep. I think I have before given it out for my lady to write down that Captain Carton had a fine bright eye of his own. All at once, he darted me a side look, as much as to say, "Steady, don't take on, I see something," and gave the child into her mother's arms. That eye of his was so easy to understand, that I obeyed it by not so much as looking either to the right or to the left out of a corner of my own, or changing my attitude the least trifle. The captain went on talking in the same mild and easy way, but began with his arms resting across his knees, and his head a little hanging forward, as if the heat were rather too much for him, began to play with the Spanish gun. "They had laid their plans, you see," says the captain, taking up the Spanish gun across his knees, and looking, lazily, at the inlaying on the stock, with a great deal of art, and the corrupt or blundering local authorities were so easily deceived. He ran his left hand idly along the barrel, but I saw, with my breath held, that he covered the action of cocking the gun with his right, so easily deceived, that they summoned us out to come into the trap. But my intention, as to future operations, in a flash the Spanish gun was at his bright eye, and he fired. All started up. Innumerable echoes repeated the sound of the discharge. A cloud of bright-colored birds flew out of the woods screaming. A handful of leaves were scattered in the place where the shot had struck. A crackling of branches was heard, and some lithe but heavy creature sprang into the air and fell forward, head down, over the muddy bank. "What is it?" cries Captain Marion from his boat. All silent then, but the echoes rolling away. "It is a traitor and a spy," said Captain Carton, handing me the gun to load again. and I think the other name of the animal is Christian George King. Shot through the heart. Some of the people ran round to the spot and drew him out with the slime and wet trickling down his face, but his face itself would never stir any more to the end of time. Leave him hanging to that tree, cried Captain Carton, his boat's crew giving way and he leaping ashore. But first into this wood, every man in his place. And boats. Out of gunshot. It was a quick change, well meant and well made, though it ended in disappointment. No pirates were there, no one but the spy was found. It was supposed that the pirates, unable to retake us, and expecting a great attack upon them to be the consequence of our escape, had made from the ruins in the forest, taken to their ship along with the treasure, and left the spy, to pick up what intelligence he could. In the evening we went away, and he was left hanging to the tree, all alone, with the red sun making a kind of a dead sunset on his black face. Next day, we gained the settlement on the Mosquito Coast for which we were bound. Having stayed there to refresh 7 days, and having been much commended, and highly spoken of, and finely entertained, we marines stood under orders to march from the town gate. It was neither much of a town nor much of a gate, at 5 in the morning. My officer had joined us before then. When we turned out at the gate, all the people were there, in the front of them all those who had been our fellow prisoners, and all the seamen. Davis, says Lieutenant Linderwood. Stand out, my friend. I stood out from the ranks, and Miss Marion and Captain Carton came up to me. Dear Davis, says Miss Marion, while the tears fell fast down her face, your grateful friends, in most unwillingly taking leave of you, ask the favor that, while you bear away with you their affectionate remembrance, which nothing can ever impair, you will also take this purse of money far more valuable to you, we all know, for the deep attachment and thankfulness with which it is offered, than for its own contents, though we hope those may prove useful to you too, in after life. I got out, in answer, that I thankfully accepted the attachment and affection, but not the money. Captain Carton looked at me very attentively, and stepped back, and moved away. I made him my bow as he stepped back, to thank him for being so delicate. No, miss, said I think it would break my heart to accept of money. But, if you could condescend to give to a man so ignorant and common as myself, any little thing you have worn such as a bit of ribbon, she took a ring from her finger, and put it in my hand. And she rested her hand in mine, while she said these words. The brave gentlemen of old, but not one of them was braver, or had a nobler nature than you took such gifts from ladies, and did all their good actions for the giver's sakes. If you will do yours for Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.